Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in to Hour 2 on this Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line. The show, as always, presented by DraftKings. We're live on VSiN, and we welcome in our DraftKings Network audience alongside Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni with you. Lots to get to over the course of the next hour. It's Thursday, which means it's a no way, no doubt day. Always fun to go through that segment. We've got another edition of Gridiron Goldilocks and great friend of the show, Captain Kirk Cousins. I mean, not Kirk Cousins. Oh my gosh, see, that got crazy. Kirk Morrison. But see, I go through my head, Michael. Kirk Morrison is going to join us in 30 minutes. Excited to get his thoughts on the NFL offseason and a former Raider, his thoughts on Antonio Pierce. He also works for the Rams, covers that team very closely, his evaluation of the NFC West and what the Rams could do this year. But where we're going to start is an update on the poll that we put out on your Twitter, Michael. So if those of you want to vote, haven't voted yet, go over there right now at M Lombardi NFL on X. We want to know on the Lombardi Line, who's the biggest threat to the Kansas City Chiefs to three-peat, because Michael put an article up at VSiN.com this week on whether or not the Kansas City Chiefs can do it. So far, it's the San Francisco 49ers in the lead at 35.9% of the vote, followed by the Baltimore Ravens, the Cincinnati Bengals. Buffalo not getting a whole lot of love here. And this is over 1,500 votes now in pocket. So I feel like this is a pretty good representative sample of what people think might happen this postseason, Michael. The 49ers in the front-running spot.
Why do you think they're not getting, the Bills aren't getting much action? I mean, look, the Bills, they gave two games away to the Chiefs. You know, the 13-second game was just so bad, right? And then last year, they had every opportunity to win the game. They missed a 44-yard kick into the windy part of the field. If you go back and watch that game, Bass almost missed the opening field goal, which was at that end of the stadium. It was a chip shot, and he, you know, kind of wobbled and just got in there. But, you know, they had a chance to win that game. They just stalled off in the red zone a couple times, and then they couldn't move the ball once they got into Kansas City territory and had to settle for a 44-yarder. I just think people must think Buffalo is going through some changes defensively, which they are. Without Hyde, without Poyer, where's Milano? Can he stay healthy for an entire year? Who's going to be, you know, we know Von Miller hasn't played well in 2 years, so maybe that's the case. But when you have Josh Allen, I don't want to bet against Josh Allen. Josh Allen does things that very few can do on a football field.
Well, I feel like because of what you just said there with Josh Allen, expectations for Buffalo are always high. But there's this growing concern that the window is closing and they lose Stephon Diggs for, say what you want about the on-off field relationship. He was producing and he was the star wide receiver in that room. And also, just from a success standpoint, it's funny looking at what the Buffalo Bills have done the last handful of years, right? Four straight 11-plus win seasons and AFC East titles. They've made the playoffs six times in the last seven seasons under Sean McDermott, yet they're 5-6 in those playoff games. They've lost three divisional round games in a row after that AFC championship loss to the Chiefs. So it's like they're so close, they're just not getting there. And now it feels like some of the talent and production that they have could drop off this year. So it seems like there's more fear around Buffalo, which if I'm Sean McDermott, that would worry me a little bit for my job. Like I've had all of this success, but it's May 30th and people are saying that we can't do it.
Yeah, do you think the ghost of 13 seconds is haunting them?
Oh, for sure.
I mean, do you think they could ever? I think it's almost like they need an exorcism. They need to get away from it. There needs to be some way to where something bad isn't going to happen to her. Because they're a good team. You know, they're a good team. And they've got one of the best players who should be an MVP candidate. And they do some unique thing. I mean, they ran the ball for 182 yards against Kansas City, something that the Baltimore Ravens, A, they didn't try to do, but they couldn't do. So I feel like, look, I know they're going through changes offensively, and everybody focuses on, oh, they don't have Stephon Diggs. Oh, my God, what are they going to do? They don't have Stephon Diggs. They'll be fine without Diggs, right? I mean, they tried to get the ball to Diggs in that game. First play of the game, they try to throw it to him. He fumbles. You know, they get a penalty because it went out of bounds. The second play, he drops the ball over the middle. He drops a deep pass that could have won. I mean, they tried to get him the ball. It just wasn't what had happened, you know? And so, look, I have a feeling that they're probably a little bit of that 13-second jinx.
Yeah, well, and there's also last year, too, they have the opportunity at Orchard Park that they let slip away. And you're like, if you can't get them now, when can you? Bills offensive coordinator Joe Brady in his first full year in that role was asked about the concerns he has with the now unproven wide receiver room and questions about the offense. Here's what he had to say.
Look, at the end of the day, this is Josh Allen's offense, right? Like, you're gonna put together the offense around the guys that you got. So for us to just say, hey, we're just going to scrap everything and, you know, everything was broken, that wasn't the case, right? And so, you know, there'll be some elements of things that I believe in, but it's more of like, tell me who we have on our football team and the guys and what they can do well, and we're gonna do that.
But I think that goes back to what you just said, Michael. Like, as long as you have Josh Allen, you've got a chance.
You got a chance. And look, we know this about Josh Allen. He will lose the strike zone at times. He will turn the ball over. That's something he does do. But he's hard as hell to tackle. And he's a problem in the run game. You have to run Josh Allen. This can't be one of those situations where you decide you're not going to run him. Because if you do that, you're taking away his game. And I'm sure Joe Brady will run him. But they're also, you know, with the way they've utilized these two tight ends in the offense, it gives him a great opportunity. I mean, they almost threw it 600 times last year, and Josh Allen carried it 111 times. So you don't want to take that away. I mean, think about this, Stormy. The guy scored 15 touchdowns rushing last year. Are you taking him out?
You're not. It's interesting, too. I'm sorry. I'm sidetracked here looking through some of the comments on this poll as well for who could be the biggest threat. In addition to people just saying the Chiefs would be the biggest threat to themselves, because we know some of the off-season issues that they have had paired in with, you know, if Patrick Mahomes gets hurt, so the if factor with him, that's what would hurt their chances. But we're getting a lot of love here for the Eagles, for the Lions, and for the Packers. We're seeing a lot of Jordan Love gifts in the comments here. Is that surprising to you that they're getting as much hype as they are in the NFC?
No, I mean, because they played well last year. At the end of the season, they had San Francisco on the ropes. Now, San Francisco's defense played better in the second half, kind of shut that down. Detroit, look, go back and watch that tape. Detroit have every opportunity to win that game. I think the fourth down call, I know people in the analytical community don't buy into momentum, but there was a momentum shift when they didn't get that fourth down, and it kind of brought life back to San Francisco. I think Detroit, I said this on the pod today, I don't think Detroit's going to suffer through any of the disease of me. I still have a sense that they're hungry. And with Campbell as the coach, I think they'll be pushing the envelope. Now, I do think people will come after them. People have prepared for them. It's going to be a harder year for them than ever before. But they're better defensively, especially in the secondary, where it really is going to matter. So, yeah, I could see Detroit. I could see Green Bay as being obstacle. And look, we just talked about Philadelphia. Phillies went into the draft without any problems. They needed a corner. They solved that with two corners in the draft. But the question remains, we had Baldy on the podcast last week, Brian Baldinger. It really going to come back to how Hurts plays. Are we getting the Hurts from last year, or are we getting them from 2 years ago?
And that's the thing. Like, this Eagles team as a whole is just trying to reestablish that dominant offensive power that they had in 2022, because it was so fun to watch. It was so exciting. And that's why they brought the Kansas City Chiefs to the brink in that Super Bowl. We'll have to see how that plays out. But interesting. Keep the votes coming. We'll revisit this again one more time before the end of the hour. But where I want to go here is where we go every day in hour two. What's on Michael's mind? What's top of mind for you today?
Well, you know, I saw that the Washington Commanders, I don't know if it was a VP, I forget who said it, but they said they're still exploring the change of the nickname. And look, I'm not a branding expert, and I'm certainly not Rory Sutherland from Ogilvy in terms of advertising and behavioral science. But what I do know is the Commanders' name and any association with Dan Snyder has to get away. Like, you call yourself the new owner and you don't take away the name he gave your team, you're really making a mistake. You can't build a new sense of a brand. Your brand, and I'm not saying they should make them the Washington Harrises, is after him, but they should try to link back to their heritage. They should try to find a way to disassociate themselves with anything that Dan Snyder has done for the franchise, because he's destroyed them. He's made a lot of money. but he destroyed them. And the distaste that still resonates in the Washington fans, football fans, is still prevalent because they don't trust it. And the longer you reinforce Commanders and you ponder it, I think there tends to be a buildup of that. And look, having been a Sixer fan and knowing Josh Harris, I think he doesn't think about some of this stuff. You know, I think it's all spreadsheets for him. And I think he needs to give this consideration. I don't understand why it's that complicated. Don't change the colors. Get something to bring the fans back to you.
And it was Marjorie Harris, you know, part of the ownership group there with Josh Harris, his wife. She was asked about the name just in general. She said, "I had a whole day out in the community and I kept referring to the team as the Commanders. It sounds pretty good for me. For now, it's the Commanders." And so again, there is that "for now" caveat. So we'll see, to your point, if things ultimately do change. It's an interesting situation. It was a legacy that was very, very tarnished and made a lot of people unhappy, and there were a lot of issues within it, and they're trying to rebrand and reframe everything. But again, it's like, do you want to have a third name in 5 years? So I also understand it from that standpoint.
But you need an exorcism. You need to get rid of the spirit of Dan Snyder. You need to get it out of your way, you know, and the only way you can do that is to have one of those where, okay, we're done with him.
I see where you're coming from, for sure. We're going to hit the break here when we come back. No way or no doubt, plus a whole lot more. Excited to have Kirk Morrison. See, I finished it much better there. He will join us in about 20 minutes. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Thanks for hanging out with us today on the Lombardi Line. Remember, for a limited time, we at the Lombardi Line are slashing the price of our VSiN Pro annual subscription. It's usually $240. You can now get a full-blown subscription for just $199 when you use our promo code Lombardi. Sign up today. We're also throwing in an extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than $0.50 a day when you use that promo code. But hurry, this special offer is only available through tomorrow. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe with VSiN Pro. You'll get our daily best bets complete with a leaderboard showcasing the hottest VSiN experts, betting splits that reveal where the money and bets are trending for every game, exclusive betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. But again, this expires tomorrow. Go grab your 14 months of VSiN Pro for $199. VSiN.com/subscribe with the code Lombardi.
Do you disagree with these takes?
No way.
No way.
Or do you approve?
Oh, no doubts.
No doubt. No doubt in my mind.
No diggity, no doubt.
It's time to ask Michael Lombardi. No way or no doubt.
So, Michael, we learned earlier this week that the Vikings reportedly considered trading up into the top five, not for a quarterback like many assumed, but instead for Malik Nabers, which would mean a trade for Justin Jefferson. Leads me to a bigger picture topic. No way or no doubt, Justin Jefferson is available for a trade at the right price. What do you think?
No doubt. Squared. You could have him. Because, I mean, he's a great player. And Minnesota doesn't want to get rid of him. But Minnesota also knows the consequences of paying $33, $34 million to a wide receiver when you want to try to build out your team. They've been held hostage by Kirk Cousins, who ate all the rigatoni. He didn't leave a nickel. He didn't pass the salt. They've been down this road before. So I think they get it. Now, the reason is they were willing to make that trade is because they knew what they were getting for Jefferson. They could get Nabers, who they said is a way to replace him. Trading him now, you're unsure. Trading him now, you're not, what are you, you're buying a pick, but you don't know what, you can't trade him to Buffalo knowing that Buffalo would be picking maybe in the 30s. So you're not being able to replace him. It goes back to the same thing when San Francisco was talking about trading Brandon Ayuk. They wanted to know that they could get a receiver equal to or better than. So, yeah, you could do it, but you're going to have to overpay now more than ever because they're dealing with the unknown of what are you going to get for him.
Yeah, and the expectation is Justin Jefferson is going to be that market resetter. So do you go from Kirk Cousins jail, as we've called it, to Justin Jefferson jail all over again? How about the Kansas City Chiefs? They're a team that we've talked about a lot today. In 2024, the Chiefs will be the first NFL team since the 1927 football Yankees to play on 6 days of the week during the regular season. Here's what Andy Reid had to say after he saw a look at the schedule.
They don't ask me. It's the first time in my career that that's happened. It's unique. So, and you know how we are. I mean, we don't really care. They could give us a Tuesday game if they want. We'll be okay there too. So we work through it, and we'll play anybody, anywhere, whatever they want to do. We're on board, so.
Leave Tuesdays alone. We don't need another day of the week. No way or no doubt, Michael. The Chiefs' historic NFL schedule will affect their chances to three-peat.
No doubt. I mean, look, it has to, right? It's difficult to play on short weeks. It's difficult to not have great rest. It's difficult to have all the things that you want to have that doesn't really manifest itself in determining keeping your team. I mean, look, the Houston Texans played at 1 o'clock every single week last week. Your schedule, it's going to affect them. There's no question. Now, they're going to battle through it, and Andy's going to act like it's no big deal. But eventually, it will become a big deal because I think it will affect the injuries. It'll be a great test study, at least, on how the injuries manifest themselves.
11-win season last year for Kansas City. Win total set at 11.5 this year. They are the favorite to make history and win a third straight Super Bowl. So a team not quite in the same echelon conversation, the Tennessee Titans. Their head coach, Brian Callahan, has a lot of belief in his young quarterback, Will Levis, saying that he believes Levis can be a really, really good top-end starting quarterback in this league. Levis told Albert Breer this week he's trying to prove the organization right. No way or no doubt, Michael, the Titans made a mistake not bringing in some competition for Will Levis in that quarterback room right now. It's him, Mason Rudolph, and Malik Willis.
No doubt. I mean, I would have, but I mean, they're probably going to say that Mason Rudolph is the competition, because if you look at Rudolph at the end of the year last year, he actually played better than Will Levis played. Now, he's not as talented as Levis in terms of his arm strength and all that, but I do agree. Look, the reason Brian Callahan got the job is because he's got to make Will Levis a good player. It's the same thing why Brian Daboll got the job at the New York Giants, is you got to make Daniel Jones a good player. And then a year after being there and going to the playoffs, and then the next year, all of a sudden, after giving them $40 million, we're looking for a replacement. I think sometimes when a player shows you who he is, believe him, as the great Bill Parcells once said. But in this case, we're not sure what Levis has showed us who he was. We were in Daniel Jones's. In this one, I'm not 100% sure. I have a really good idea, but it's going to take more time.
The win total for the Tennessee Titans this year sitting 6.5, and the juice is on the under, -135. How about the Las Vegas Raiders? Marvin Lewis told reporters in his Wednesday press conference that the opportunity to join Antonio Pierce is what drew him to Vegas. And we know he is a former NFL head coach. He's got two former NFL head coaches on the staff. Having former head coaches in the building will help Antonio Pierce and his development in this role, Michael. No way or no doubt.
I think there's no doubt it can certainly help him. I mean, he's got people there. Plus, you're not counting Tom Coughlin, who they paid a hefty salary to be a consultant. I mean, the Raiders have a lot of money in this coaching staff. But at the end of the day, Antonio Pierce has to be the guy doing the calls. If everybody thinks it's coming from Joe Philbin, who's been a head coach, or it's coming from Tom Coughlin, who's been a head coach, or coming from Marvin, who's been a head coach, then he's going to lose credibility. So he's got to balance that very closely. And at the end of the day, is his team good enough? You know, that's the question. Is he good enough at quarterback? Is he good enough in the offensive line? Can they compete with the Kansas City Chiefs? You know, we didn't put them in the poll to challenge the Chiefs for a reason.
Although they have the recipe, right? I am interested when it comes to Antonio Pierce, how much the substance is there, you know? And, like, we don't know that answer yet, because you can only rely on mentality and rah-rah so much. So I'm excited to see. I hope that it's a good thing. I hope it's a step forward and a positive. Like Herm Edwards said when he joined us on the show earlier this week, but only time will tell. Let's go back to the Philadelphia Eagles. We talked a lot about Nick Sirianni and buy or beware. No way or no doubt, this Eagles offense is poised to return to the explosiveness we saw in 2022.
I think that's a no doubt. If they run, I mean, look, Barkley's the best back they've had in Philadelphia for a long time. Miles Sanders was good. He gained over 1,200 yards for them, you know, and Barkley's better. Now, Barkley, you've got to worry about in terms of protection. Can he improve in that area? He's gotten better from his rookie year to now. So that's a concern. And durability for Saquon is a concern. Can he stay healthy? You said it yesterday. He's never been on a team that has won or has been this good in his career. So, I mean, this is going to be newfound territory. And I think ultimately they're better. They've got a lot of weapons. They're talented on offense. Hurts has got to play at a higher level. And look, they've got the young Sid Gilman, the joystick calling plays. How can't they be good?
Yeah, he's had one season with the Giants where the team won more than six games. And, of course, it was 2 years ago when they went to the playoffs. But other than that, it's been big bad. And he told reporters last week, his first 7-on-7 huddle, he was, like, wide-eyed. He said, you see A.J. Brown, Devonta Smith, Dallas Goedert, and Jalen Hurts. That's not a bad group to be out there with. And that's not even including the offensive line who, yeah, in addition to him being the best back that the Eagles have had in a long time, this is the best offensive line he's played before by far. Last one, real quickly. No way or no doubt, Ty Lue, who just cashed in on the long extension with L.A., will win an NBA championship with the Clippers. What do you think?
No way. No way. I don't see it. I mean, look, it's remarkable. I mean, Ty Lue had a lot of teams going after him. It was unbelievable. And obviously, he's a well-thought-of coach, but look, this run that the Clippers have had with Paul George and Paul Leonard, with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, is a challenge. And are they going to be good enough? I know Ballmer will pay whatever it takes. Obviously, he paid for his coach. But to me, the West is really good. The West is really good with Oklahoma and Minnesota, and they have draft picks. And we still haven't talked about San Antonio, who's got one of the great young players of all time sitting out there.
Yep, Victor Wembanyama certainly coming up in the corner there. But Ty Lue, it's funny the way we talk about him, because we are like, he's one of the best coaches in the NBA, masterful at the job. And then you're like, wait, but he hasn't been to the finals with the Clippers? He hasn't won an NBA championship with the Clippers? Interesting. The new deal that he got has him with LA through 2028-29, one of the NBA's highest paid head coaches at approximately $14 million a year. Okay, you hear that music. That means we got to take a timeout. Coming up, we'll hit the Raiders and Rams expectations in 2024 with former NFL linebacker turned analyst Kirk Morrison, who's extremely close to both organizations. Also curious on the players' perspective when it comes to a potential 18-game season and the PA's desire to eliminate the offseason program. All that and more when we return.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
In addition to watching and listening to VSiN, don't forget about all the great betting tools and content we've got at VSiN.com as well. Best bets from show hosts and guests, betting splits, pro tips and trends. And right now on the homepage, our own Michael Lombardi's latest column, Can the Kansas City Chiefs three-peat? Breaking down why none of the league's greats of the past have been able to accomplish the feat and what it would take for the Chiefs just to get back on top of the mountain, let alone make history. Don't miss out. Head to VSiN.com. One team and coach who says they have the recipe to beat those Kansas City Chiefs, the Raiders and head coach Antonio Pierce. Let's talk to a former Raider, get his opinion. Kirk Morrison joins us on the Progressive Guest Line, former NFL linebacker turned analyst. He's been stuck with me the last couple years, every Saturday covering college football for ESPN. He's also on SiriusXM NFL Network Radio. What's going on, Kirk? Thanks for joining us.
Oh, great to be with you, Stormy. Mike, how you doing?
Good, good.
We're doing great, Kirk. So,
go for it, Michael.
Oh, no, I was going to follow up with the question that you originally started. I mean, we listened to Antonio Pierce. One of the rules I've always had when I worked at the Raiders, when you used to go out, we would be in Napa, and Al Davis was standing out there on a summer morning in his white outfit with his towel, and people would walk up to him and say, how are you doing, Mr. Davis? And he would yell and growl at him. I would always say, like, why would you pet the tiger? Like, if that was a tiger out there, would you go pet it? Of course you wouldn't, right? So, like, but then again, here's Antonio Pierce. He's going to go pet the tiger. He's going to tell the Chiefs that he has the recipe to beat them. You know, even though he didn't complete a pass in the second half against them the last time they played them. Not one pass. So let me ask you, do they have the recipe, or are they just petting the tiger?
Well, Mike, I guess quick story time, because I had to learn that lesson the hard way when it comes to Mr. Davis. I remember asking him that question being in the team facility a day after a loss. And so I'm getting, you know, extra workout in, getting some extra film work in. And, you know, Mr. Davis usually would come later in the day to the facility to get his workout in. And so I remember seeing him, and, you know, it's just you know, the normal interaction that you would think with anybody. So I'm walking by, and I said, "Hi, Mr. Davis, how we doing?" And he stopped, and you could just see the growl that his face just, and I'm like, uh-oh. And he looked at me and says, "Kirk, we lost yesterday. Well, how do you think I'm doing?" And so from that point on, I never said, "How we doing, Mr. Davis?" I would always say, "Hi, Mr. Davis, good day," and just keep it moving. You know what I mean? So I never gave him that interaction of how you're doing, but just, "Hey, Mr. Davis, good day to you." Okay. But no, that being said, Mike, I'm going to be honest with you. A lot of what Antonio Pierce is doing is, to me, kind of what I felt when my last couple years in the NFL, playing with the Buffalo Bills. Their nemesis, obviously, was then the New England Patriots. And no matter how good you were, how great a season you started off with, it didn't matter in Buffalo, your record or how things were going. It's what did you do or how did you do against the Patriots? That's just how it was. Like, oh, great, you're 5-0, but wait till the Patriot game. Or how did you do against the Patriots? And I felt sometimes as an organization, and even at that time, just our psyche was that it's the Patriots, and you almost felt like you may be down in the game before it even started or before the game even got there. I think that's what Antonio Pierce is trying not to have happen when it comes to the Raiders, saying, I know they're the Chiefs. I know they've won 2 Super Bowls over the last couple of years. I mean, the last 2 Super Bowls, they're trying to win go for a three-peat. They've won 3 in the last 5 years. All that being said, we can't kiss the rings. We can't act like, look, they're better than us. They put their pants on one leg at a time like us. I think this is just all just the coaching mantra of saying, hey, they're good, but guess what? We're just as good as them. And if you don't believe that, then you shouldn't be a part of this team. So I just think that's just, you know, Coach Pierce doing what he has to do to keep his guys motivated and not feel like they are not on equal level playing ground with the Chiefs.
Well, and now here's the thing. How do you take that mentality and make it reality? Because the reality is, when you look at what the Kansas City Chiefs have done and what the Raiders have done, is that, you know, Vegas isn't there right now. Their win total this year in the betting market is 6.5. The expectation is for them to not be particularly competitive in the division and be held out of the playoffs again. What to you is a successful season in year one in full under Antonio Pierce?
I mean, obviously you want to get to the playoffs. You want to win your division. That's success. They can't look at the outsiders. Everybody's going to be, you know, a naysayer when it comes to the Raiders. And look, rightfully so. I understand that, especially in the division that you're in. But you also have to look at, I think the mentality of this team is like, look, dude, nobody think we're going to do anything. We got to go out there and ball out. We got to go play. And the only way that we can keep getting noticed, keep getting people to understand that it's a different culture, is we got to beat these top teams. We got to continue to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. And I think I saw Jack Jones talking about it the other day. Man, we're the last team to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. That's the mindset inside of the locker room, is walking around saying, like, we know how good we can be. The outside folks don't know. And that's the mentality. You can't let the outside noise get into the locker room. And I think that's what the players are telling themselves right now.
Well, the outside noise is saying they don't have a quarterback. And I don't know if the outside noise is wrong. How do you defend that?
I think that last year, Aiden O'Connell was put in a situation in which he was a 4th-round pick. He wasn't supposed to even be the quarterback. But because of injuries to the quarterbacks in front of him, then just the way that the season went in terms of a coaching change, Aiden O'Connell was put in a difficult situation, but yet they were able to find ways to win football games at the end of the year. And so he could be their quarterback, but he's got to go out there and prove it. They've added some more weapons to him. And I think it's like the mentality I saw from other teams, that knowing that, hey, it may not be the quarterback that you think we should have, but he's our guy. He's one of us. And I think that's the maturity that this team has to have. And they'll find out quickly. They'll find out early on what it needs to be. But adding, obviously, Brock Bowers, we know about Devontae, we know about Michael Mayer and Jacoby Myers. I think this is a team that realizes we're going to win nasty. We're going to win ugly. It's not going to be pretty. I think, Mike, they're not going to be throwing for 300 yards a week, but they're going to win games close because they feel like they're going to be the much tougher team because Aiden O'Connell, Gardner Minshew, they're one of us. I mean, if you really think about it, they look like Raider type of quarterbacks, in my opinion.
Well, stay out west, but the NFC West, another team you cover really closely is Los Angeles Rams doing their pre-halftime and post during the season. What do you expect from LA this season? And especially defensively without Aaron Donald, do you think they miss a step on that end?
Yeah, I mean, I still expect them to be one of the better teams in the NFC. They'll be a year better. A lot of their rookies last year, all 14 that made the team a year ago, are all back. Even Stetson Bennett, who will have a major role this year with Jimmy Garoppolo being suspended for the first two games. So he may be the backup for the Rams the first couple games of the season until Jimmy comes off of suspension. But look, Matthew Stafford played great football last year, and I think that's the reason why the Rams, to me, could be one of those formidable teams in the NFC. When it comes to Aaron Donald, you can't replace him. It is going to be defensive line by committee. I know we say running back by committee, but pass rush by committee may be the new term in Los Angeles. They went out and drafted Jared Verse, you know, in the top, I mean, in the first round. Braden Fisk also as well out of Florida State in the second round. So they've got some pieces and guys who developed last year as rookies. They just know that it is all going to come down to everybody having a hand in it, everybody having a part in it. And I'm not so I'm just not fixated that I think the Rams at some point may even go take a look in free agency right before the season starts, may bring in a Yannick Ngakoue or some guy or somebody who's an older pass rusher but can be maybe a leader amongst that group.
Yeah, I mean, look, they've done a great job of rebuilding their offensive line, but losing Raheem Morris, I think, will be something difficult. You know Chris Shula. Tell us about how that'll be different than Raheem Morris.
Well, I think, obviously, Raheem has been there. He's been through the battles and obviously was the defensive coordinator when they won the Super Bowl, but Chris Shula has kind of been the coach in waiting. He's been here. He knows, obviously, how things have been run. He's also had those opportunities to call plays, especially during the preseason. Sean McVay kind of delegates others to call plays during the season, and whether it's on offense or even on defense, and Chris Shula has been that guy. So he's had some experience in doing that. Now he'll do it in the regular season. I think that we'll see a similar Rams defense, but this will be fun. I mean, because I think he's got a lot of young guys who are just trying to find their way in the NFL. So for him, it's like really, truly a blank canvas. And I think he's excited to put this all together. A little bit different, obviously, than Raheem Morris in terms of Raheem Morris's, you know, energy. But I think Chris Shula's got it, man. He'll have a good time putting it together.
Kirk, I've got about 50 more questions for you, but only 10 seconds. So I appreciate you so much for joining us today.
Buddy.
You're awesome.
Don't pet that tiger, buddy. Pet that tiger, Kirk.
I got you.
What a great story that was. Kirk Morrison doing a great job with ESPN and NFL Network Radio. We're going to hit the break. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're so close to crowning an NBA champ, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. If you're new to DraftKings, listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSIN. That's V-S-I-N. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. And while on the theme of hoops, it's time for our pro tip of the day. We do these every single show here on the Lombardi Line, and you can search all of our show's pro tips at VSiN.com by sport and by show. Michael, talking about the Timberwolves game 5 going head to head with the Mavericks tonight, you actually came up with this pro tip, which I think is very, very valid in terms of an inflated line potentially tonight. Tell the people at home.
Well, I think you have this momentum built where everybody just assumes that Minnesota, because they're going home, is going to play really well. Now, we know they've lost to Denver twice at home, and they've already lost to Dallas twice at home. So it isn't like home court is this lock it down, automatic, put it in the W column, right? And there tends to be a little bit of a, oh, we got this, and you go back home. So the line gets inflated because of it. We saw 4.5 and go to 5. You know, and I think if you like Dallas, take the 4.5 now, because I think that's going to be your best number. Because oftentimes we see the public drive the number up with really no evidence to support that. And I think that's what we're seeing today. Well, could the Timberwolves win? Sure, but I think it's going to be a close game. Look, the other reality of it is you're counting on two elite players in Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic to shoot 33% again from the floor. That ain't going to happen twice.
Yeah, we talked about this game yesterday, and I did bet it yesterday. Mike Somich came on the show in hour one. He's taken the 4.5 as well. So the one concern is that we all on the show today like Dallas, but I'm right there with you. I think that what we saw the first three games is more reality-based than what we saw last game. And by that, I mean, I think that the inconsistency of Karl Anthony Towns is going to come back through, and the consistency of Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving will be back on display. So that's the way that I'm playing it, home or road. I have faith in the Mavs, whether it's tonight or in a game six. I think that the Mavericks are going to walk out of this series with the win and end up playing the Boston Celtics in the NBA final. I just like taking the plus points today in a series that's been closely contested down to the wire, and the Mavs are better in crunch time as well, despite what we saw last game. So let's not overreact to last game. Let's go with what we've seen throughout. Again, VSiN pro tips available on VSiN.com. Let's close out the show today with another edition of Gridiron Goldilocks. We did this yesterday with running backs in new places. Today we're going to go wide receivers that have new homes. So are their respective props too high, too low, or just right going into the 2024 season? We'll start with Stephon Diggs, who goes from the Buffalo Bills to the Houston Texans. No matter how much Brandon Bean is trying to tell us it's cap related, we all know it was the get him out of the building trade. And I think it is a win for Diggs going to an up and coming team with an up and coming quarterback. Diggs has 6 straight 1,000 yard seasons. But C.J. Stroud is going to spread the wealth as well, with Nico Collins, who just got a new deal himself, and Tank Dell, who's going to be back. The receiving yards prop set at 949.5 yards, his touchdowns at 6.5. What do you think about these numbers? Too high, too low, or just right?
I think they're a tad too high, and here's why. I think when you break this down, you know, look, they just paid a ton of money to Nico Collins, right? They just paid a ton of money to Nico. And so you want to get the ball to Nico. And they're really their playmaker, their difference maker of their team last year was Tank Dell. And so, like, you know, you want to get the ball to Nico. You need to get it to Dell. Dalton Schultz is a really good player for them. Diggs is kind of the guy who's not going to be the first read. You know, he's more of an outside receiver that this offense is an inside. So I think they're too high. I would play the under on all of them.
That said, because you mentioned what you do about Tank Dell, obviously he's coming off the broken fibula, also a gunshot wound that happened this offseason. I know that Aaron Rodgers and Joe Burrow, rightfully so, are the shortest shots for comeback player of the year. There are a lot of people ahead of Tank Dell on that list. I do not hate a flyer at 35-38-1 on Tank Dell for comeback player of the year. Just a thought, if he continues and is healthy and has the same type of dominant performance that he had last year. How about Calvin Ridley? He shocked a lot of people this offseason by, no, I'm not going to stay with the Jags. No, I'm not going to go to the New England Patriots, who are the like outward suitor that everybody was talking about. He goes to the dark horse Tennessee Titans. New head coach Brian Callahan said yesterday, Ridley is everything they thought he would be, called him a pro's pro, spoke glowingly about his talent. He had 1,000 yards and 8 receiving touchdowns his first season back from the suspension. His prop this year, 875.5, receiving touchdowns, 5.5. Too high, too low, just right?
I think it's probably a tad too low, but here's my concern with it is, are we sure Will Levis is going to be the guy? Are we comfortable that Will Levis is the guy? Can he get him the football? or are we going to be in one of those situations where we're all like last year, where, you know, the quarterback can't get the ball or stay healthy enough to give him the ball? So that would be my only hesitation here. I think when you're talking about these numbers, you're talking about it all has to be related to the quarterback as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that I think you have to take a real hard look at in this case.
So I think that's a great thing to mention, especially as we go to this next wide receiver, Diontae Johnson, who goes from Pittsburgh to Carolina. So he had 717 yards and 5 touchdowns on 51 catches in 2023 after not scoring a single touchdown the year prior. He did earn a Pro Bowl nod in 2021 with his lone 1,000-yard season. That was the final year of Big Ben. So when he's had good quarterback play, he's producing. But we all know the last 2 years with Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, Mitch Trubisky hasn't been there. I think that Bryce Young is going to have a better season this year. I know that this is something that we've talked about. I don't know how many other people believe it, but I think he's going to have a better year this year. And I think Diontae Johnson could be a prime recipient of those yards. 825.5 is the receiving yards prop. Receiving touchdowns, 4.5. Is it too high, too low, just right? How we feeling?
I think it's too low, and I would play it. You know, look, I think Bryce Young is going to play well, and this will be the guy they want to get the ball to. And look, Dave Canales, we know from what he did last year at Tampa, he can get the ball to the receivers. His offense did a wonderful job. That's how he got the head coaching job. And Johnson is sitting there. I mean, 4.5 touchdowns, he should be able to get to that. You know, 825 yards isn't a lot. He's going to get the ball. And look, if Bryce Young gets protected – and he got the crap beat out of him last year, he's going to make throws. I mean, Bryce Young isn't a blown pick. I think that's the hard part. Is he as good as C.J. Stroud? Maybe not. We'll find out. But he was so poor. C.J. Stroud would have looked like crap playing for the Carolina Panthers last year. We might be having the reverse conversation if they would have picked who they wanted to anyway. If they would have picked Bryce Young and Carolina would have picked C.J. Stroud, what do you think that would have looked like?
Yeah. Well, and that's why I say with the new pieces that they've invested in that offensive line to protect him, the weapons that they're trying to have out there, the distribution, hopefully gets a little bit more separation because the Panthers wide receivers last year had the least amount of separation on DBs of anybody. I feel like it could be better. I'm with you. I think these might be a little bit too low. And I know it's hard to stomach after we say Bryce Young just had 11 touchdowns last year. And now we're saying that Diontae Johnson's going to get 5. Just keep an open mind. That's all I'm saying. Keep an open mind. That's how you get plus money, right? Last one here. Jerry Jeudy, he goes from the Broncos to the Cleveland Browns, a player who has largely failed to reach his potential. Steve Smith called him a jag, just a guy for a reason. But again, it's tied to the quarterback. What do you think about Deshaun Watson? His yards prop, 725.5, receiving touchdowns, 3.5, too high, too low, just right.
I agree with Steve Smith. I mean, when has this guy been a great – everybody keeps waiting for him to be a great player. I haven't seen it. I have not seen it. Look, Amari Cooper is going to be the guy here. Then he should be the guy. They've got to get him the ball. And Njoku's the guy. And I'm not sure that you're going to be throwing the ball to Jeudy over throwing the ball to Elijah Moore. So I don't like this one at all. I know Elijah Moore didn't have a lot of plays. I mean, he had 104 targets last year. Think about that. So I'm not. I know they paid Jeudy. I don't know why they did that, but I'm not on board on this one at all, Stormy. I think it was something in the analytics or something they told him to get Jeudy. Look, Jeudy, remember when they had Hamler, Jeudy, and Courtland Sutton? They were supposed to be this dynamic offense, and they couldn't do anything.
Yeah, they did a whole lot of nada. So last year, he did have 758 yards, which would go over that total. Just 2 touchdowns, though, which would go over under the receiving touchdowns number. The Browns are just a conundrum for me in general, and Jerry Jeudy isn't a player I want to buy in. So, yeah, that would be a pass or under for me. I'm with you. Okay, Michael, fun show as always. Enjoy your long weekend. There we go. See, it's nice when you have those Fridays off, right?
Yeah, well, but I still work Sunday. But don't worry, we'll be here.
Sorry.
Have a safe trip.
I guess
trip.
I'm the
Enjoy
one that
it.
Doesn't work Sunday. I guess I'm the one that has the long weekend this week. Have a great day. Yeah, good luck, everybody, with your bets. Go Mavs.